Blog Talk Radio.
The following wrestling broadcast is performed by highly trained professional athletes. It is not recommended that their actions be imitated in any form whatsoever in the home. This is the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour with your host, Frank Namoli, and wrestling's masked cowboy, the Maverick. Welcome, welcome one and all. It's Friday night. It is your weekly dose of retro wrestling. This is the LAW Retro Wrestling Show. And I am your host, Frank Namoli. And by my side, as always, my ever faithful partner, wrestling's only, and I mean only, masked cowboy, the Maverick.
Who still can't find the link. Not the missing. It's like the missing link is on our show this week. How about that?
Real quick, I got to apologize if anyone was looking for the link. I don't know what happened to it. I'm trying to figure out the navigation of some of the stuff on here. I did throw it up real quick on the LAW Retro Wrestling Radio Facebook page. So, but actually, if you're hearing this, you probably already have the link. So that ain't going to do me no good.
Which is one more person than had the link to me. That one guy who's listening.
Well,
it's probably my
to our friends out in Israel,
everything. They didn't get the link either.
No, they're listening. They never miss a week. Actually, I think they listen on the podcast, which is highly recommended because you can listen at your convenience. You can sit in the morning with a big bowl of cereal, you know, get some Batman or Superman crunch and sit there and listen to our show.
Nobody's eating that. Nobody's eating that.
No. Nobody's watching it. The cereal's actually good. Oh, we're not going to talk wrestling, are we? I mean,
that's
sorry,
our job.
We are going to talk.
We're not
wrestling.
Allowed. We were told we were the wrestling guys.
Who told us that?
You told me that the people in charge of the network said we were wrestling guys.
The people in charge of the network don't even know we're on the air half the time.
So we got to talk wrestling.
All
not
right.
Allowed to
did
talk
you see
not
that,
wrestling.
Did you see that move Batman put on Superman? And oh, man. Well, partner, this week I think we got another interesting show.
Yeah. Just want to be like, every week it's like, we've got the best show ever. Just once you wanted someone to come in, this show's going to be all right. Hang on if you got nothing
to
do.
We got an above average show this week.
Slightly better than mediocre.
Exactly. Put it this way. The end of TV sweeps is coming, so all your favorite shows are going to be ending soon. You're going to be glad we're around. Because we are definitely better than watching Oprah.
What about Morris Oprah?
No, we are better than watching Oprah.
Oh. Can you still watch Oprah?
Apparently she likes to eat.
So do you, but no one wants to watch you eat.
You don't know that.
Coming
soon to YouTube. Watch Frank eat.
It's not a pretty sight.
Quiet, you. Well, this week's show, we're going to be tackling a new subject. We're going to be talking about international wrestlers. Before the invention of the internet, before the videotapes, you only read about in magazines and, hoped one day to see in action. And now, of course, with the world being at your fingertips, you could see everybody, but there were days when you know, they were legends, and when they'd come to the area, they were a big deal.
Yeah, you absolutely hit the nail right on the head with that one. The part, one of the big draws to these guys, especially in the retro wrestling era, was the fact that you only heard about it or you saw clips, and when they came over, it was a huge deal, and they were big, big draws. Nowadays, you know, everybody's got access to the internet. New Japan Pro Wrestling's on television here in America every week, sometimes three or four times a week. So it's a much smaller world, and the aura and the mystique of some of these guys is all but gone. But back in the day, it was amazing. Did you just flush a toilet?
No.
Sounds like you're flushing the toilet.
No, I'm actually at the water cooler.
He's flushing the toilet.
No, I'm
he's
getting,
flushing the toilet live on the air.
Actually, Bay has accused me of going to the bathroom live on the air. And just so you out there know, I was at the water cooler getting a glass of water to enjoy while we talk about some good old retro wrestling.
All right. I still think you flushed the toilet.
I did not flush the toilet. So I got a question for you. My first taste of of international wrestling, and I think this was a lot of people's first taste, was purely by accident. The Hispanic network that was on UHF would only come in clear sometimes and would air wrestling at 5 a.m. on Saturday mornings. Was that your because I know, believe it or not, in this area, that was a lot of people's first taste of wrestling.
I really didn't. My first taste of truly international wrestling came in much later than anticipated. It wasn't until I started going to some of the smaller wrestling shows in the area, because growing up we went to the Spectrum all the time, and then, you know, when I started going with my friends, we went to the Civic Center a handful of times. And it wasn't until, you know, I would read about, you know, these guys in the magazines, and I would see the ones that would come over to America, but it wasn't until it was when Jake the Snake was feuding with Conan in Mexico. And it was making huge, huge, huge news up here, and all the magazines were covering it, and the dirt sheets, as they call them now, were covering it, the wrestling newsletters. And interestingly enough, came across a copy of the DVD of the Jake versus Conan feud, and it was my first taste of Lucha Libre. And immediately, and I have a very fond Lucha Libre. I'm a big fan of the theatrics and the cartoon and, you know, the cartoonist-esque, not necessarily the cartoon. Huge fan of Lucha Libre, and it started there, and I was watching Jake and Conan. It's this crazy, crazy feud. And then, of course, as you would watch, you know, the Japanese guys, we would go and get Japanese DVDs and just sit, and literally at the time it was like binge watching. We would go and buy, these vendors would get, I don't know, bootleg copies, wherever they would get copies of like 6 weeks worth of New Japan and 6 weeks worth of Lucha Libre. And we would go to the arenas and these small shows and buy these DVDs and just binge watch them.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, for me, like I said, I woke up early one Saturday morning, and there was wrestling on. I did not recognize anybody. I couldn't understand the language, but I watched it because it was wrestling. And then out came Mil Máscaras, who, of course, you read in about in every book, and, you know, was in WWF here and there. And so, okay, I was like, okay, I know this guy. And then, of course, out came his brother, who I've heard about, Dos Caras. I was hooked, because this was something, again, I never saw before, you know, and I was very, like you, I was a huge fan of the stuff because everybody had a mask. And then out came one of my favorite wrestlers from the old WWWF, El Olympico. And I don't know if you remember him.
I've never got to see him, but I've heard of him.
And he was a fun watch. I mean, in the WWF, he in his later career, he was more of a mid-carder.
Okay.
But, you know, back in his heyday, he was huge, you know. So once I saw him out there, you know, I was like, okay, this is really, really cool. And that was kind of what started me on. And then, like you, to get the old videotapes of just 6 hours, 3 hours of New Japan, 3 hours of All Japan. And I used to sit like you and binge watch them.
Right.
So that was kind of my, that was kind of my, how I got started, an introduction to the international wrestlers. But like you said, when they came into the area, they were a big deal, man. And it was, you know, especially when you weren't expecting them. And it was like, oh my goodness, they got to bring in somebody from another country to beat this guy. I always thought that was kind of cool.
Especially in the cases like when Mil Máscaras would come over and he was a big deal and he was the hero and it was awesome to watch. It was really cool, but I think you touched on something when it was, you know, when the foreign villains would come over. It was always a much bigger deal. And, you know, one of the guys on my list, two of the guys on my list, taking a quick peek at it, that was really what was a big part of their mystique and their draw is that they were coming over to America to conquer. And, you know, it gave an extra level of pride and patriotism and made their matches much more important. Because when Mil would come and he would have these big matches and he would vanquish the villains, it was always awesome. But a lot of times they would vanquish, you know, Rusty Brooks. You know, yeah. They were never getting over on the big villains because you needed them for next week. But, you know, when the evil foreign invader would come over, it would always be a bigger deal. And then, you know, you'd need your big stars to rally and defend the country's pride.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Now, and it was also vice versa. I don't know if you remember, but for a while there was a huge series of matches where Mil Máscaras took on superstar Billy Graham. And it was at the height of, you know, Billy Graham's title run. So everyone thought, like, oh, my goodness, this is the guy that's going to, you know, he's coming in from the borders of Mexico to save us. You know?
Right, and to win the day.
And it was a great, great feud because no one saw, you know, because he kind of just came out of nowhere. Because I actually remember watching wrestling at the time, and all of a sudden he just appeared on WWF TV, and immediately he's getting title shots. And, of course, Máscaras was no small guy. You know, he kind of matched up physically well with superstar Billy, and Billy played it up, man. And they were some classic, classic matches.
Yeah, and he's going to be on my list later, so I'll talk more in depth about him. But yeah, it was a big deal, especially because that's one of those few times, like you said, when they got a shot at the big belt, and you know there was always that, you know, is he going to win and become a truly international star? You know, hindsight being, yeah, they would never do that. Well, Vince would never do that. I don't think Senior would either. But, it was always awesome when these guys would come, so.
Definitely, definitely. And like you said, you know, it was at a time where you didn't get to see these guys unless they either came to the area or you got to see a bootleg or whatever. So, We're going to talk about that. We're going to go through our list like we usually do. Remember, if you want to call in, you can call in at 718-508-9883. Or if you're too shy to call in, you know, you don't want your voice to be heard on air, because I know the creature John Cannon listens on a regular basis, and I know he's very shy about calling in, as is
Why do you encourage him? He just flusters you and makes you weirded out.
Well, I figure, you know, and we're talking international wrestlers, and we, you know, I'm sure Wyndham James
went
for the third.
We're talking international wrestling stars, not that dude.
Well, LAW has, you know, Wyndham James Winthorpe the third, Monsieur Ooh La La. They're international stupid stars. I mean, superstars.
No.
Did I open a Pandora's box?
Not talking.
Anyway. Let's get it, because we're going to take our first commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk international stars of wrestling. See you in three.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs.
Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
All right, we are back. We are talking wrestling. We are talking international wrestlers. So let's talk.
Yes, Les.
As always, I let you start because I always feel you get it off on the right foot. So let's hear what you got this week.
All right. Well, we already touched on this guy briefly, so I figured I would use him as my first pick. My first pick is the legendary masked luchador, Mil Máscaras. And he was a guy who kind of captivated me before I even knew what Mexican wrestling was. You heard he's a famous luchador from Mexico, and he would come in and he had that high-flying style and these moves that, you know, you never saw before. And he had the cape and the mask 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 and the mask. You get the idea. And I always thought he was just really, really cool. And he would come in occasionally, and he wouldn't do much, especially when I started watching wrestling later. They didn't bring him in much at all. But it was always the magazines you would read about him, and you would see these – they'd always have these great pictures of him flying through the air and, you know, the highlight packages of him doing all these flying things. And he was just like a real-life superhero. And for a guy like me, that was just like, wow, that guy's cool. And I didn't be able to follow him much, but he ultimately over the years, you know, you go back, you watch the videos, you see what he does, you see the clips, you see his – but his influence on wrestling as a whole is still being felt today. Lucha Libre is very, very big. It's become a pop culture – I can't say phenomenon, but it's very big in pop culture. You see it everywhere, and, you know, he's a big part of the reason why. He was really one of the first luchadors to break ground here in America, and, you know, and even his appearance in the Royal Rumble, even though he was much older and slower, it was just really cool that one year he came out in the Royal Rumble and he did all his spots, and, you know, and he was definitely a groundbreaker, and I think he deserves a spot on my list of international superstars.
Well, I agree with you 110%. He was actually the first international superstar I think I ever saw live, and it was
That's cool. It was
at the Philadelphia Spectrum. Again, you had just heard about Mil Máscaras, and it was Ken Patera had just won the belt from Pat. He actually had it. And Ken Patera had that, the full Nelson challenge and all that. And
the Intercontinental Championship, for those keeping score.
And he was basically unbeatable. And he was building up to his, you know, to go against Backlund. And he was mowing down everybody in his path or, so then they got the bright idea to start throwing some curveballs at people. Like, one month they threw Bruno Sammartino at them. And then all of a sudden, you know, they always announced the month before who was coming in next.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, Ken Patera with his challenger, international, Mil Máscaras. The place went batty. I mean, everybody went. And I was there with my dad, and I said, Dad, is he really, you know, I couldn't believe it. I'm jumping up and down. Dad, is he really coming? He's really coming. Dad said, I guess so. Because, again, I had only seen him in the magazines, and I was so excited. And it was. You nailed it. He was a real-life superhero. You know, he came out with the mask, and he had the mask on top of the mask, the big cape. He's flying around, and he was all bronzed up. And this is when he was actually still moving good. And
Right. It
was just a wonderful experience, one that I, you know, have a very fond memory of. So definitely think that he belongs on the list.
Very cool. Very cool. And you know, he also, I mean, one of the things that, like, in hindsight, when you went back and found out that he did movies and television appearances as Mil Máscaras, I thought was just so cool, and that there's actually a genre of movies where he came from. Those Lucha Libre movies crack me up. I included one in our TV show with the midget wrestling and all the craziness. And, you know, just actually lends to his appeal, the fact that he, you know, did so much as that. You know, Shawn Michaels never really played Shawn Michaels. Maybe he did. Was that episode of Baywatch? Did he play Shawn Michaels?
I don't remember.
I remember he was on one, but the idea that this guy was making movie in gimmick movies about this guy as a superhero, and it just played into the whole aura as well.
And he's one of the guys, I don't know if a legitimate picture of him unmasked actually exists.
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah, he would arrive in airports with the mask on. Because I remember that was always a big deal, that he always had the mask on.
Right. Which is kind of hilarious, because if he really wanted to travel incognito, he would just take the mask off because nobody knew what he looked like. Just travel as a regular dude.
Now, you know I have a No Mascaras doll.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah, straight from Mexico, actually.
I see.
They did them just like the old cool the Jack Specifics.
Uh-huh.
He was done in that style. So I just figured I'd mention that because I really enjoy it.
Do you sleep with it?
No, yes. Anyway.
All right, get
now,
on with
first
it.
Guy, the first guy on my list, I could not wait to see anything of this guy live. And then when I finally did, it was probably one of the biggest letdowns in the history of my life.
Wow.
But it was. He still made an impact as an international star, and so much so that he was actually elected to public office in his country. And I am talking about Giant Baba.
You know, just be careful. This is twice you've pooped on Baba on our show. He's going to stop listening.
Yeah, Baba died.
No, he didn't.
Yeah. No more Baba.
He's in hiding.
With Bruce Lee?
He's going to get you.
No, well, I'll tell you. You know, as a kid, you always saw Andre the Giant.
Yes.
And then you always heard about the Japanese Andre the Giant.
The legend of Giant Baba, right. The only guy that is as tall as Andre.
And you were like, oh, my goodness, and look at the size of him, and you couldn't wait to see them two lock up. And then literally, like, the first time you saw Baba wrestle, he was so slow the match went back in time.
He was a slow fella.
Yes. But he was one of the first international superstars to hold a major title, and a major U.S. title, because he was the NWA heavyweight champion, recognized. And he was such a beloved wrestler. I mean, he went on to a successful political career. He was actually in the Japanese Senate, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to have to pull up that information, make sure I'm right. Or I know he had a seat. Or was that Inoki? Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. I want to think, is it possible that it was both of them? I'm trying to remember which one did hold. I know Inoki. Yeah, but I think maybe both of them. We'll have to double check on that, but I believe. I don't know. I'll have to look it up. Are you looking it up? He's Googling it.
Yes. Yes, and
he's Googling.
Oh,
you kept him speak while you're Googling on air.
My good friend, Brian Mackey, said that Inoki was in public office and not Baba. Thank you, Brian. I knew you'd be listening when we mentioned international superstars.
Thank you for doing Frank's. Thank you for doing Frank's research.
Brian is a huge Japanese wrestling nut, and he knows his stuff. I will say this. He knows his stuff better than 90% of the people The only thing I hold against him is he's an AJ Styles fan.
Well, maybe he should host the show and I'll be his co-host.
Quiet, you. You're not getting rid of me that easy. But, like I said, I was so hyped to finally see him, and then when I saw him, and again, it was, you know, when Baba was a lot older, and he had the slowest chops, but man, every Japanese wrestler acted like they were hit with a clap of thunder. Baba would lay them mitts down. And one of the things that Baba was always complimented on is, you know, he ran All Japan, and they said he was probably one of the most honest promoters in the world.
That sounds shady.
Never cheated anybody, paid everybody
honest
very
promoter.
Fairly. Hey, you want to hear the line of the night?
Okay.
Our friend Brian said, Baba died and still didn't lose a step in the ring. That's how slow he was.
That's awesome.
That is the greatest line I ever heard. Oh, man. But, again, as far as international superstars go, you have to take your hat off to Baba, because to this day, you know, people still tell of his legends. And I posted the match with him and Harley Race from 1980. And, you know, if nothing else, you'll get to see some good wrestling. And you don't have
Harley
to
Race
slow
and
motion.
Giant Baba. I was going to say,
yes.
Don't adjust your dials. They're actually moving at that speed, folks. Because Race wasn't
if you
with
wanna
swift
learn...
either.
Hey, if you want to learn how to wrestle, watch this match. Because you can literally see every move at a slower pace. So that's how
Race,
you do a hip toss.
Race was another guy who he would even bump in slow motion towards the end of his career. Him and Junkyard Dog had that 45-minute bump down. It just took him all day to hit the ground.
Well, you remember when he used to do the headbutt off the second rope? And it literally looked like it would stop halfway?
Right.
And then just
would get
start
up, make
going
a sandwich.
Who's next on your list, partner?
My next pick, the first time I saw this guy hit TV, it was just like, whoa. And then again, it's the foreign mystique, and the fact that he came in as a villain, you know, just added to it, because he was this foreign menace coming over from the Orient to take over America. And they actually, when he first came over, they referred to him as the Pearl of the Orient. And with the green mist and the moon salt and that wacky corkscrew elbow that was just so pretty to watch, you know I'm talking about the Great Muta.
Now, that's one I actually had on my list. Because of one thing and one thing only, he was one of the few that you knew about in the United States before he became, I guess you would say, an international superstar. Because he, you know, everybody had their first taste of him in WCW.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he went over to Japan and became as big a star as you can get.
Oh, he got after his WCW run, when he first came over, he went over and just became almost mythical, and still to this day. But, you know, I'm talking about that first NWA/WCW run when he had that awesome series of matches against Sting and you know, he even had good matches with Lex Luger and Ric Flair, and, you know, he was just so unorthodox, and the face paint, and he never spoke. The fact that he had Gary Hart as a mouthpiece was just brilliant. And
now,
tell me your mind didn't blow the first time you saw that green mist. And I miss Kabuki. I later on you find out Kabuki did it for forever. But
yeah,
you know,
see,
the first time I saw it, it was just like, what?
Now, see, I remember Kabuki doing it first. And if you remember they used to say he was Kabuki's son in
WCW?
Yeah,
there was a relationship. Yeah, there was a relationship to Kabuki.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was son. I thought, was it son?
Yeah, that's what WCW used to claim, that Great Kabuki was his father.
I thought, I knew there was a relation. I thought it was like a nephew thing, but they may have said father. I get hit in the head a lot.
I was so disappointed when I found out they actually weren't related.
Yeah.
But he was a phenomenal. I honestly can't believe that he never got a run with the NWA / WCW title. Because, to be honest with you, he had it all. And he had to be, without a doubt, the most successful wrestler who didn't speak English or didn't speak English well enough to come over here and do – and that just shows you how great of a wrestler he was. Because, you know, you do get a lot of Japanese wrestlers, Mexican, and the language barrier kind of seems to take something away from him. Moody, you didn't even care that you never heard the man speak.
No, it was part of his mystique, and it really worked for him, you know, the fact that he never said a word.
Yes, and like you said, they put him with Gary Hart, which, if you remember, Gary Hart managed Kabuki in WCW.
Right.
So he already had experience with this guy, you know, in a different form. And Hart was phenomenal. Hart just added to it, you know. Definitely, man, you cannot have a list having the Great Kabuki. And like you said, his matches with Sting, his matches with Flair was just unbelievable.
And Steamboat, too. He had a match or two with Steamboat that was off the page.
And see, I don't remember him wrestling Steamboat.
Oh, he did. He did. And they were some excellent, you know, excellent thing matches. And the explosiveness was what I always remember about Muda. Everything he did just had so much more impact because he exploded into everything. You know, we talked last week about Lanny Poffo and previously about Lanny Poffo and his moonsault. And I think one of the things that held it back, it was so smooth that it didn't really look like it hurt. But when Muda did it, he looked like he was going to kill you. Everything he did was just boom, that corkscrew elbow, you know, just lightning fast and full of power, and the kicks and the chop thrusts and everything he did.
Oh, definitely. His moonsault looked like it literally nailed you. And, man, and even like you said, the mist. Now he was the first guy to remember he used to do the different color mists.
Yeah, sometimes
like
in the same
one
match,
after the other.
He would blow green then right, and blow green then red, and that would always just blow my mind.
Yeah. Oh man, that was unbelievable. Again, you know what? Kudos on that. But that's good because I had an alternate. In case of such a thing, and my alternate literally was a superhero in every way, shape, and form. And I was a lot older. I was kind of involved in the wrestling business at this point. But when I started seeing the promos for this guy, and the fact that he was coming to the United States, literally lost it. Because it was another one of them guys, man, that you couldn't believe he was actually as good as what they were saying, and that is Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yep, he's also on my list.
That's okay. We can do. But
oh,
when
yeah,
he
we'll
came, the promo that WCW cut with him alone, you were just like, oh my goodness, look at this guy. And they put him with Pillman right off the bat.
Oh yeah.
And literally, I don't think they could have picked a better guy for him to work with. Pillman got him over. You know, they went back and forth. It elevated Pillman. I mean, the moves that Liger was pulling off at that point were so innovative. And you know, he came out with the mask, the flashy costumes. He literally was a superhero come to life.
Yeah, absolutely. The first time he came out and you looked at this guy and he was just like, this can't be real, because he didn't have an ominous build. He was small, but the first promo package and you're watching him just do things that defy gravity and don't even make sense. And those two matches with Pillman were so good and set the stage for what could have been an amazing WCW light heavyweight division. Unfortunately, they hired Watts shortly after, and he literally self-destructed the entire company by pulling the plug on that division and just making a joke of everything. But, you know, that those two matches were so good and so well-remembered, they randomly brought it back for the very first Nitro. They're just like, oh, by the way, we're bringing Jushin Liger over to wrestle. And Pillman wasn't involved in anything at that point. You know, Pillman was kind of floundering because the Hollywood Blondes broke up and he was kind of being a nothing baby face with no push. And then for the first Nitro, they're like, oh, by the way, we're just bringing Liger over for just because we want this match on our first show. And, you know, it had been 10 years since they last did wrestle, but it was still an excellent match all around.
It was, and then, you know, he went on to come back and forth in WCW and had some classic matches with other he wrestled Rey Mysterio, he wrestled Ultimo Dragon, which is one of the matches I put up. And he never disappointed. And then, you know, the fact that he survived brain cancer, you know.
Yeah. Just prove him that, like you said, he really is a superhero.
After that, I mean, literally, the guy came back to wrestle after that, and you're just like, are you kidding me with this?
Yeah. Yeah, just so amazing to even think about.
Yeah, I mean, and he just recently appeared on WWE TV.
Fireton? Oh, he was down in NXT, wasn't he?
He wrestled
Tyler Breeze. Yeah, I didn't watch it. When I was doing research and watching some old Liger stuff, the Tyler Breeze thing kept popping up in the feed, but I didn't actually watch it. But yeah, and he did TNA not that long ago too, from what I understand, based on some of the things I saw posted in.
No, he didn't.
Oh, okay.
I'm
wrong. Must be someone else.
He has asked that that period of his life be stricken from any and all record books. He refuses to acknowledge. He said that was the Liger imposter. That was Ultimo Dragon getting revenge on him. Nah, he did appear on a TNA pay-per-view. If I remember correctly, he took on the kid that had that stupid flip move. Canadian.
The stupid flip move.
Petey Williams.
Petey Williams? No, you're talking about. I just love how you describe it.
Was that not the stupidest move you've ever seen in wrestling?
Yeah, it was pretty awful.
But yeah, when you talk international superstars, you there's no way you can't, because he transcended Japan. And I think he was probably the last big guy that you really wanted to see come over here.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was right before the dawn of the internet. So all the mystique has been taken out of anybody else over there. Coming over in that regard. And, you know, especially the masked character, the cape, the superhero persona. You know, even at one point when he was coming over, because the costume harkened to Ultraman.
Yes.
There was a lot of talk that he was you know, going to get his own series, his own Ultraman-style TV series. They were like, oh, in Japan, he's going to do this. And, you know, I don't know specifically what makes for that, but and whatever
came
of it.
I think he did get his own cartoon.
Internet insanity. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he was so big at one point and probably continues to be. I don't know what his current situation is over there, but, you know, he's definitely a legend, and, you know, and hopefully it's not him humping a bear in the woods.
And guess what? He did get his own cartoon.
There you go.
So there you go. You know, he you can't beat that, man. I mean, how many guys besides him and Hulk Hogan could say they had their own cartoon?
Well, Ric Flair probably can now, but he doesn't talk about it.
You know what? I bet you he does.
Yeah, sadly, you're probably right.
Yeah, because let's face it. He was kind of an attention. Or I shouldn't say kind of. He had attention.
He
now.
Still is. He still is.
And I was just told by our friend Brian that the Best of the Super J's tournament starts tomorrow, and Liger is in it. Wow. For those of you who don't know what that is the Japanese equivalent of the Sweet 16, the Tournament of Champions. The Super J Cup is where all the – basically, it's been going on for years. I used to have a few of the original ones on VHS, and it's where all the juniors maybe if Brian's still listening, he can smarten me up on this. Used to be juniors from all over the world would compete, Mexico, Japan, and it was just this big – great. It was a huge. It used to be one of the greatest tournaments ever, and I didn't know it was still going on. And Liger was always a focal point of it. I mean, he always had some great matches in it. And the fact that he's still competing at his age, and he's going to be competing against like some of the young guys now. I don't know who's in the tournament this year, but that just tells you everything you need to know right there.
The cool.
Liger is now 51.
Wow. That's just staying power and the fact that he's a legend competing in that tournament. The Super J Cup, the Super Junior Heavyweight Cup, that was always the video. Whenever it came out, you know, whenever the distributors would have it, everybody would flock to it. And you get to see guys like Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit and, of course, your two Jushin Thunder Ligers and two Cold Scorpios. I believe he competed in one. Almost certain I saw him in one. But, yeah, and it was just – it's an amazing, amazing tournament. And was always
well, here's
a great –
something interesting.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Something real interesting is they haven't had one since 2009.
So they're bringing it back.
Yeah. Well, it looks like I'm looking at it, and I didn't notice because, like I said, you know, we used to get the tapes afterwards. It wasn't an every year thing. It was 94, 95, then 2000, 2004, and then 2009. So they haven't had a lot of them.
Interesting.
That was kind of interesting. Yeah, yeah, very interesting because I thought that was an annual thing. And but again, we were getting it like because of the time it was before wrestling was big on the internet. We were getting them all at once or, you know. But I'd love to see – I don't have a list of who's in it this year because I would really like to see that. So, there you go, man. Little wrestling knowledge thrown on you people tonight.
Is that what it was? You just read it off Google. You didn't have any knowledge.
Oh, okay. You know what? And again,
he's still reading on the internet.
Why, No. I just got corrected. The Super J Cup is a different tournament. This is the best of the Super Juniors, which is, according to Brian, an annual tournament held every year. The Super J Cup is totally different. So we were correct. There was one held every year. We just had the names. That's why it's good to have an international correspondent.
And someone who actually does their research and doesn't rely on Google.
I'll have you know it's Wikipedia. Wikipedia, jackass.
And how did you find your Wikipedia entry?
Google.
Frank Google the Mole is your new nickname on this show.
Hey, who's your next pick, jackass?
Frank Google the Mole. All right, Google. My next pick, I actually kept off my list for a while. And because when I sat down to make the list, I wanted guys who kind of came over and were special attractions. And I was leaning toward it, but this guy kept popping up in my newsfeed. And he pops up in my newsfeed a lot. And he's one of my favorite all-time villains. And he's definitely one of the greatest performers of all times and one of the greatest characters of all times. And he spent so many years playing the evil English villain that you kind of took it for granted that he was actually from England, because he made most of his career over here. And I'm talking about, and especially early on, his first run was just brilliant. Lord Stephen, now William Regal.
Now, see, I don't know if I can clarify him as an international superstar because I think he had more. See, I don't know enough about him over in when he was over in England. I mean, I know over here he became a huge star. And I still honestly to this day think he's one of the most underrated performers to ever step in the ring. Because the guy could do it all. You know, whether it be a villain, hero, commissioner, you name it, he did it, and he did it well.
Yes, he did. And he's from England, which makes him international.
Okay. I'll give you that.
Are you Googling again? He's Googling again.
No, I'm not.
But anyway, especially early on, when he first came in and he had William Dundee, I posted a rather hilarious segment of him. And just the fact that he used the English wrestling style early on, and they actually had Marcus of Queensbury rules matches to accommodate his evil gimmick, which I thought was just hilarious. He's a great, great villain in general, and he really played up the English gentleman snob better than anybody ever has or ever will have, if anyone's listening all with their nose twisted in the air. So now.
Can't really argue too much with you on that one. So I will give you that. Now, you gotta. What is your all-time favorite Regal segment?
It's something I actually have said as a parent in my house, but my favorite all-time William Regal segment is when they first brought him back to the WWE as the ambassador, and he promo that the napkin is not your enemy. And it was something that struck me so funny. I've actually said that to my children.
And you know what my favorite one was?
What's that?
This tea is a bit tart.
Oh, yes.
Chris Jericho had his way with
urinated in his teacup. Yes.
This tea is hot.
Right.
But
I gotta post it because you're mentioning Steven Regal.
Mm-hmm.
Or William Regal. You gotta post the Regal versus Goldberg match.
He did everything he was asked to do.
Yes. Goldberg learned a valuable lesson that day.
That's very important.
That just because a man doesn't have muscles doesn't mean he can't beat the snot out of you. One of my favorite. I must have watched that match about 1,000 times. It never gets old. So very good pick. You know, he's like I said, he's one of them guys that I think gets overlooked so much. And I mean, you got to agree, he's got to be one of the most underrated wrestlers of all time.
Absolutely. I mean, partially and because he struggled for a while with some personal demons that took him out of the spotlight. But, you know, he still was one of those guys who always delivered. And, you know, so many memorable moments, so many great matches. You know, he never had those big main event top spot matches, but every time he was on the card, you knew he was going to deliver. You knew there was going to be, you know, a good match, and he could work with just about anybody. And continues here. He does a lot of work down in with training the NXT guys, which is one of the smartest things they've done, because some of the head scratching decisions they've made as far as trainers go down there, it's always baffled me. But that's a whole other diatribe that I'll go off on one day. But Regal has always been one of my favorites.
And it always amazed me. They have him there, and they don't use him because, to me, he could definitely teach them kids a lot. I mean, everything from how to cut a promo to, you know, how to wrestle. To me, I think that they missed a boat on him, and they still.
Well, I'm sure he's not down there as a figurehead. I'm sure he's working with them. He doesn't get the high profile head trainer's job, but what he's teaching them, I'm sure, is more valuable than, you know, what they're learning from many other trainers. I don't think he's strictly a figurehead in that regard.
Okay. Well, I got to give you, you know, I got to give you that one. Now, my next one may be a little controversial. But again, if we're going to talk international superstars, this youngster has to come to mind. And of course, I think I just gave the hint away to you. I'm talking about one Mr. Carlos Colon.
The pride of Puerto Rico. The shining star.
No, that's his kid.
That'll never catch on.
Cologne literally is... You don't get bigger than that. You know, he is... He basically owns Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
You know, he was... a very well-beloved star, to the point where they would riot if he lost the belt, if he lost matches, or if people thought he was hurt. You were literally lucky to get out of there with your life.
And, yeah, I mean, absolutely. He had a stranglehold on the island of Puerto Rico for many, many years. And when he would come over to America, you know, it was never quite the big impact in the WWE up this way, but he did a lot of NWA territories and a lot of down south stuff. But it was always one of those guys who, when he came in, and again, and I said it about him a couple weeks ago, I think, the thing that impressed me about Carlos, though, every time I saw him, I would just take a step back, because this is the dude who constantly went toe-to-toe with Abdullah the Butcher and lived to tell the tale. Like, they were mortal enemies, and a lot of that comes from, you know, the magazines and all, and you heard these war stories, and then you see that man's forehead and some of the pictures of the bloody, bloody battles, and it was just like, this guy is not a dude you ever want to mess with. So when he was coming into town, it was a pretty good idea. You had a pretty good idea that somebody was getting their butt whooped.
Well, I don't know if you remember. I don't know how deep you were into wrestling. The Puerto Rican WrestleFish, I think it was WWC, actually came to Philadelphia and did a show in Philadelphia.
Don't remember.
Yeah, it was a one-and-done deal. It was one of them things. They came to one of the smaller arenas. They came in, and one of the matches was Cologne versus Abby. And let me tell you, the stuff you see, that them two were just wow. And it was interesting because this was way after Bruiser Brody's death. The Invader was nowhere to be found on the card.
Well, you know, no surprises there.
But it was a one and done deal, and it was funny because they only brought a few of the WWC wrestlers, and they used a lot of United States Hispanic talent, which was kind of weird. But like I said, it was a one and done deal. But
you got
to see Cologne live. Yeah, but you got to see Cologne live, and it was pretty special. Very nice guy, but you know, he captivated the fans of Puerto Rico, and you know, say what you want about the controversy, you can't deny the guy's accomplishment.
No, absolutely not. Cologne is one of those great legends, and you know, like a great international legend, there's a lot of mystery around them because we didn't get to see a lot of them.
Yeah. And I always thought I always liked that when you heard about the guy and you got to see him, and they still got that mystery surrounding him. So, all right, partner, man, who's next? Who do you got? What's going on? What's good? Let's
all right. My fifth pick is an international star who, honestly, isn't really an international star. He was born in America. He's American by birth, but he was raised in Mexico, took on the namesake of his famous uncle in Mexico, and ended up becoming a 10 times bigger star than I think even he imagined. And as much as Mil Máscaras paved the way, I think when you think of luchadors today, unanimously people think of Rey Mysterio Jr.
Interesting. I did not see you picking him.
No?
No, I honestly that's one I didn't even consider on any of my list. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad, because he was a big star in Mexico.
And continues to be today.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that stopped Ray from achieving even bigger greatness was just, you know, his injuries.
Well, and you realize that most of those injuries came late in his career in the WWE after a lifetime. The whole idea that Ray is injury prone, as they like to say, I think is a misnomer. It's just the internet people like to turn on people as quickly as they can. Yeah, he had some injuries towards the end of his WWE run that kept him out. But you're talking about a guy who was wrestling professionally at like 16 years old, doing these high-flying daredevil revolutionary moves, and came over and, you know, as far as being a bigger star, he's one of the few luchador. Actually, he might be the only luchador to hold the WWE Championship, although their version of the World Championship. And I think the fact that he did as much as he could, considering he was only 3 foot nothing to begin with, is huge, and he continues to be a big star in Mexico today. He went home. He's doing a lot of stuff in the Lucha Libre. He's now involved in Lucha Underground a little bit. I don't know how long that'll last. And I don't know that we've necessarily seen the end of Rey in the WWE. I think he's definitely a Hall of Famer. And I think, he captivated so many people for so long that he's garnered a reputation towards the tail end of his career that he didn't necessarily earn, being lazy, being injured, being, all that other jazz. I think that it's overlooked that his accomplishments and his contributions to the sport as a whole are considerably overlooked now. And the match I posted, Eddie Guerrero versus Rey Mysterio from Halloween Havoc, one of the best matches WCW ever put out.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I'm going to agree with you 100%. He got a bad rep, and I don't think he was lazy. I don't think and he really wasn't that injury prone. I mean, you look at the amount of time he worked. I mean, I'll be honest with you. At this point, John Cena's more injury prone than Rey Mysterio ever was.
And I'm not going to deny that he didn't have his injuries. He had a big knee injury in WCW.
Well, anybody who works
towards
that schedule does.
Oh, absolutely. And then towards the end, his last couple of years in the WWE, he was out more than he was in. I will absolutely grant that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's kind of overlooked how big he was. I mean, he was selling so much merch. And people were so into him for so long. And when he first came to the WWE and they made that big fuss and they put the mask back on him, which was the stupidest thing WCW ever did. He was a huge, huge thing. And I don't know that they ever would have given him a push to the big belt if Eddie hadn't passed and they capitalized on it. But he more than earned that title run. Unfortunately, it was booked horribly.
I agree with you 100%. WCW didn't know what they had with him. They dropped the ball. And because I always thought it was funny that everybody's like, oh, why are they putting a mask? Everyone knows what he looks like. You know what? Because WWF knew that mask was gold.
Oh, yeah, that was the aura and the spectacle. That did goofy nonsense he did without the mask, he never even came close to being, they put that mask on and made an excellent, excellent run with that. And, the pageantry of the Lucha Libre and the costumes he would come out with every year for big events at WrestleManias were always so awesome. And, he was in every way, a great international superstar. He gave you a nice Latin flair, and he was a big draw. Like, SmackDown had huge, huge Latino ratings when him and Eddie were on top.
Yeah, definitely. I can't argue with you. I think, like you said, he got a bad rap, but, he ain't going nowhere, and he is a future Hall of Famer. So definitely a good one. Now, I'm going to wrap up my list with a guy who still has the mystique because he was very rarely seen on these shores.
But I will go on record as saying he's probably the most famous Japanese wrestler ever. And that is one. Mm-hmm. He has an Italian name, but he's not Italian. Antonio Inoki.
Antonio Inoki. Good old Tony.
Because he was truly the first wrestling superstar that everyone knew his name and never saw his match for one reason and one reason only. And that was when he took on Muhammad Ali and made headlines all over the world. Because if you remember, there was two matches. There was two boxer versus wrestler matches. And I honestly thought this was funny. Ali had his choice. He could either take on Andre the Giant or Inoki.
Ali wasn't stupid. I'll take my chances.
Chuck Wepner was.
Right.
Yeah, and the Bayonne Bleeder got owned. But it's funny because I if you want to check it out, I got the entire match on the LAW Retro Wrestling Facebook page of Inoki versus Ali. I don't know how legit the match was, but there are people in the boxing industry that says Ali was never the same. His legs were never the same after that. Because if you remember, Inoki took a real strategy in that. He wasn't like, he dropped to his back and you couldn't punch me down. So you wonder what was really going on with that match. But, and if you remember, Inoki never had a, would come over for long runs in the Fed. He came over for the showdown at Shea where they had him fought Larry Sharp. And what was an excellent match. And he stayed in Japan. You know, he didn't come over for runs in NWA. He didn't come over for any. The only time I remember him coming over was for Showdown at Shea, and that was pretty much it.
He made a couple appearances in WCW, NWA, I believe, and a few other appearances, but that was his most high profile. But to me, with Inoki, I'd always likened, and he's truly an international star in that sense. He was enormous in Japan, and it was similar to when Hogan and Flair would go to Japan. They would go over for a cup of coffee and do a quick tour. And the same situation was when Inoki would come over here. You know, he was their version of Hogan and Flair. And he would come over and do a cup of coffee and a world tour. It would be big press. And then he would go back home. And it was truly a special attraction kind of situation. But, yeah, the Ali fight is definitely legendary. I don't know the specific – it's not one of those things, like, that's ever really been blown open as to – the politics behind it and the how much talking they actually did.
Okay.
To my knowledge, I think it could have been a situation where the wrestler just didn't want to get showed up. And, you know, and was going to do his thing. I don't know. What's so funny?
And he had, I loved his back brain kick.
Yes.
And the fact that no one uses that as a finisher today is just a darn shame. Now, you know what's funny is I'm pulling up Inoki's credentials, and they have the wrestlers that he trained.
Uh-huh.
And some of the interesting names on the list, which, you know, again, this I find funny, is Muda is one of the guys he trained.
Nice.
Also, he trained Bad News Allen, who we remember as Bad News Brown.
Who actually used the back brain kick.
Yes. Ryan Adams. Crush.
The singer?
Himself.
Oh, all right.
No, Crush.
Would have been cooler if he trained the singer.
Cuts like a knife.
He trained the first Tiger Mask. Forgive me if I butcher this name. Soryu Sayaman. He trained one of my favorite Japanese wrestlers of all time,
Hiroshi Hase, who to this day I think was one of the most underrated Japanese wrestlers. Another guy who had a run in WCW, Shinsei Hashimoto. Another great wrestler, Tatsumi Fujinami. I mean, wow. He's literally trained a who's who of international wrestling here. So I found that kind of interesting. And he actually is still on, it looks like he's still serving the House of Counselors in Japan.
Because no one's tough enough to knock him out.
At 73 years old?
The Japanese government, you have to fight your way in. You don't actually, you know, that's why their whole parliament's filled with ninjas and wrestlers and sumos. True story.
We are going to raise taxes, and then all of a sudden you see a back brain kick.
Right. Okay, we're not raising taxes. I nominate him to run from the House, and he gets suplexed across the table. Japanese is just a crazy culture. You don't know, man. This is all true, as far as you know.
Wow, here's a little trivia too.
Right,
Great
also?
Muda.
Bingo.
No, this is for Brian Mackey.
Oh, okay.
But this is
then
actually pretty interesting. This is pretty interesting though. He's got to call in the show instead of just messing with us. Brian, you are welcome to call in anytime you want. But Muda Chono, Hiroshi Hashimoto and Liger were all in the same dojo class. Talk about the rookie camp from that is like the ultimate who's who of rookie camps there.
Imagine the one dude that didn't make it. Well, there was the legendary camp that Ganya ran at Flair and Sheik, and you know it sounds similar to that. I forget who else was in that one. But, yeah, it sounds like it was like that was that magic year or like the Cal Arts that birthed the
and then,
all
and
these
then,
legendaries.
And then there was the Robbinsdale High School where you had Henning, Rude, and I forget a couple others all.
Right. They all
like
just
around the same time.
Right.
But, yeah, could you imagine, like, you know, being in that class? It's like,
imagine being the dude
you know,
that didn't make it. There's always like one Harvey Jockstrap Jones who, you know, never made it. And he's like, honest, I trade with all of those guys. What happened to you?
Bun Boy Barton. He was in that class.
There you go.
Or Jake the Milkman Middleman. Yeah, you're 100% right. That would suck. No, you weren't.
Yeah.
Reminds me of our famous friend who claimed to be the first person to take on Hulk Hogan, and no one believed him until the DVD set came out.
Oh, bad.
Yeah. No,
took on
Hulk Hogan.
I wrestled Hulk Hogan for Gorilla Monsoon in Madison Square Garden. Well, it was Allentown. He was close, and it was two years after he claimed it happened. Which is why his story, the fact that he got all these facts wrong is why we never believed him. He said it happened 2 years before Hogan's debut in Madison Square Garden. So we're like, yeah, okay. It was also the same guy who convinced us that he flew to Puerto Rico, wrestled three times, and made it home in time for work the next day. So, you know, some of Ben's stories were true, some of them not so much.
Still funny.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He was always hilarious.
Oh, man. Well, partner, looks like we put another one in the books, man. That was a interesting show. Like I said, it was good to talk about something a little outside the box. As far as the, you know, with the international superstars. Now, there were some honorable mentions, but I didn't know if enough people would recognize them. And that was Charlie Crabtree, Big Daddy Crabtree, who was basically the Hulk Hogan of London, England. But if you weren't in England, you didn't know who he was.
Yeah, he's also English, and nobody cares.
You can't hold that against him. I mean, you know, Steven Regal, I bet you knew who Big Daddy Crabtree was.
Steven Regal probably does, but I only know one guy from England, and he's just lousy.
Oh, you better hope he's not listening.
He can't afford the free radio.
He posted a mean driving pic today. Like, he literally drives around angry.
Well, sure. If you were him, you'd be angry all the time, too. Just because you got genetically the short end of the stick on everything.
Oh, man. Well, again, another great show. Had fun, partner, you know, talking something different. And
it's not different. I talk smack on Winthorpe every week.
Not that.
And I can't wait to get him back in the ring as soon as the lazy promoter gets off his butt and runs the show.
Quiet, you.
Boom.
Yeah, well, you know. Some of us want to run quality shows where everything makes out instead of just throwing something together and hoping that it sticks. Anyway, on that note, thank you all for listening in. Continue to check out the podcast. From what I understand, you know, our replays have been very good, and you know, we appreciate that. And again,
11
you know, because you're not listening live does not mean you cannot that you don't have to participate in the show. Like I said, if you see the subject and you want to send us a message earlier in the week, if you can't listen live, or if you you know, we'll definitely read your stuff on the air, like our friend Brian tonight. I want to thank Brian for contributing to the show. Definitely was in his wheelhouse, and we definitely appreciate him. And he actually sent us a Jushin Liger versus Muta match to post on the Retro Wrestling page. You don't get much better than that.
Ooh, that'd be fun. I might watch that after the show. And if it's like Wednesday and you're listening to the podcast, call anyway. It doesn't matter who's on the air. You know, call and talk to one of the other hosts about retro wrestling. Just randomly. Be like, yeah, I heard Mav and Frank were talking about international stars. And it'll be great because all the hosts, you know, they love us and they want to talk about our shows too. So feel free to call in anytime you want.
Especially
you know, call
the
in during, call in during TV, call in during TV Nation and you know, tell them all about, you know, your favorite Inoki memory. They love that stuff. Call Thursday Night Bay. Call Thursday Night Bay and just say, Matt said to call, and he wanted to know your best Muta story. It'll be great.
Look, I know you're talking to Dawn Wells from Gilligan's Island, but I want to talk about Muta. And then ask who would win in a fight, Marianne or Muta? Think about it.
Death match with coconuts.
Oh, I could see him moonsaulting out of the tree on top of her. So there you go. You know what? We're going to put that retro wrestling poll up. I think we could do polls. Who would win, Muta or Marianne? In her prime. I know Marianne's a little old right now.
So it's got to be fair. But the important thing is that you're calling other shows and talking about ours. That's what they love here at Totally Driven Entertainment.
They do. They do. You know, you please, this is not a shoot. We are legit. Every show loves us. They all tell us on a daily basis. So, yeah, call in everybody's show and talk retro wrestling. Make it the Retro Wrestling Network. That firing's coming any day now.
That's all right. I got something else to fall back on.
That's all right. I'm going to book the celebrity death match, Buddha versus Marianne.
You're desperately trying. You keep coming back to it, hoping it's going to stick.
No, you're just mad because you didn't think of it.
No, I don't care.
You care. You care. All right, partner. On that note, it's time for that snappy goodbye.
Snappy goodbye. Happy trails.
Are you ready to be totally driven? Totally Driven Entertainment Network has a full lineup of shows dedicated to total entertainment. Starting on Mondays, we have the always relevant and often hilarious Hard Talk with Big Daddy and Big Booty Trudy. That's at 6 p.m. And at 11 p.m., go 8 flights up and get your mind right. Tuesdays at noon, Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira covers professional wrestling news, rumors, and one-of-a-kind interviews with professional wrestling performers and insiders. At 8 p.m., join Smith Hart of the legendary Hart family dynasty for the Hart Grapevine as he goes behind the scenes and shares his knowledge of the professional wrestling industry and some truly remarkable special interviews, too. Welcome to Hump Day, Wednesdays, 9:30 a.m., the Coco and Wee Wee Show asks the age-old question, who do you love, who do you shove? And at 8 p.m., the Give No F's Cosplay Variety Hour brings you the best in cosplay, comics, video games, and more. Thursday nights at 5 p.m., Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira returns to the airwaves to cover professional wrestling news, results, and more. At 8 p.m., Totally Driven Radio, the show that started it all, brings you the best in topical conversations, celebrity interviews, exclusive musical guests, and so much more. Your Friday night would be incomplete without a trip to Uncle Shawnee's Playground. Join Uncle Shawnee at 8 p.m. and prepare to be offended, but, you know, in a good way. At 10 p.m., don't forget the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, bringing back the golden age of professional wrestling. Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., the Mojo Sports Show starts your weekend off with a healthy dose of sports mojo. Get the latest news, scores, results, and more every Saturday morning. At 9 p.m., Totally Driven Radio rocks. Bay Ragney unleashes his inner beast as he takes you on a heavy metal journey and looks at the music he thinks rocks. That brings us to Sunday morning, the perfect time for a big weenie. At 10 a.m., the Big Weenie Castanini Show goes live around the world. And ending the week at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights, join the TV Nation for your weekly dose of the Nerd Herd and talk all things comics, TV, movies, and pop culture. Remember, get driven, stay driven. Are you ready to be totally driven? Totally Driven Entertainment Network has a full lineup of shows dedicated to total entertainment. Starting on Monday.